president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document which he was sworn to uphold?
Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
I don't understand the problem with registering guns. We register cars.
Mark Levine brings you the news the government doesn't want you to know.
Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
We do have secret prisons. That is not what America's all about.
Let's go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Every week, we discuss the issues of today and give you a chance to call in and express your views. And today, I'm going to discuss what's on your mind. Yes, I can read your mind because it's on the mind of every American. Indeed, it's probably on the mind of virtually everyone throughout the world. It's the economy, stupid. Sorry, didn't mean to call you stupid. That, of course, was the phrase used in Bill Clinton's war room in 1992. It was a way to remind the people working in the Clinton campaign that the economy was first and foremost on people's minds. That every other issue, while people care about abortion or gun control or other issues of the day, foreign policy, in economic stress, the economy is first and foremost on Americans' minds, no more so than today. The Dow dropped to its lowest level in 12 years today. We also, of course, have a dramatic increased number of foreclosures. Unemployment is up above 8%. And Congress and the President are working very hard to fix the problem. But what is the problem? What is the solution? Democrats and Republicans are already on each other's throats arguing about that. So I thought I'd bring a little of that down home for you. I brought my guest, Mike Lane, frequent Republican guest. He's a Republican strategist, the president of Intelligence Strategies. And he and I are going to discuss what ails the economy and, more importantly, what we can do to fix it. Because honestly, it's a lot easier to talk about what's wrong with the economy than what it is and how it is we can fix the economy. Mike, welcome again to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, thank you for having me back. I look forward to it.
I want to give the number out right at the beginning because I really hope our listeners will call in. The economy is a very complex thing. It is on everyone's minds. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, locally 571-749-1166. Mike, the Dow has dropped, but frankly, we've been in trouble a lot before then. The unemployment level is high. President Obama has a wide variety of plans, everything from a stimulus package to specifically a homeowner package. I think it's realistic to say it's going to take some time to get us out of the economy. We had a long time getting in. It's going to take some time to get out. Is that fair?
Well, I don't think anybody expects it to come back in a 24-hour snap. But let's go through a couple of things. First of all, no matter how many times President Obama wants to say, hey, I inherited this economy, and I think I've counted them saying it at least 329 times so far.
Is it not true?
Well, the fact is, it is now his economy. He may have inherited it, but it is his economy, and it's his to fix or make worse, and he's been making it worse. Primarily, I think, through three things. Number one is talking down the economy. More times than he says, hey, I inherited this economy, he said, this is not going to get better right away. You know, this is going to take some time. It's going to get worse before it gets better. And when you talk the economy down like that, you take away investor confidence and things just keep going south. Because a lot of things are built on expectations, and he has done a yeoman's job in lowering everybody's expectations to the point where people have zero confidence in what he's doing. The second thing, and we'll get into this in a little bit more detail, I'll just mention it, is I think the street is talking with their dollars about their confidence in his recovery program. The market's down 4,000 points since he became president. I think, you know, the votes are there. It's gone. He's just not doing the job. The third thing is, I don't think the average American person thinks that what's going on is really the solution to it. I think that they think everything is a little bit of an overreach. Too much of this, too much of that. They're wondering why it wasn't just stimulus instead of every little thing that Obama could come up with to throw in there. And that's why we have a lack of confidence, and with a lack of confidence, that's why we have a declining economy.
Well, Mike, one of the reasons I'm always glad to invite you on the show is that you said in about 5 minutes enough for me to dispute for an hour. So then and there, there's a lot that you said.
I'll just go light a cigar.
I want to take it one by one, piece by piece. First of all, let's just deal with a few facts. The market has not gone down 4,000 points since Obama became president. Let's just go through the facts. The market went down about 4,000 points from May to November of last year, before the election. It went down another 1,500 from the election when George Bush was still president until President Obama became president January 20th, and since then it's gone down about 1,500 since then. So just not
3,000 points since Obama's been the man.
Since he was elected and 1,500 since he was president.
As I said, it's all based on expectations, and the expectations are not good.
It's funny. I used to make this argument with you back when we talked about the Bush recession. It seems like we've been doing this for a while. I'm going to surprise you, perhaps, by agreeing with you partly. In the sense that I do think that President Obama was lowering expectations. I think he was letting people know, you know, we don't expect a recovery in 2009, maybe the end of 2009, more likely in 2010. This is the worst economic shock since the Great Depression. But recently he's changed his tune, and I think appropriately so. I think he's given us all the bad news. He started with, you know, his speech on Inauguration Day. I remember standing out there with 2 to 3 million of my closest friends out there hearing. And
I was inside keeping warm that day.
You know, I didn't expect you were there. But I expected to hear a very uplifting speech, and instead we heard a very sober inauguration address. Frankly, he surprised me. But I think he was recognizing the pain where Americans are in. I think he's already changed his tune, just totally apart from policy. In terms of tone, I was very, very impressed with his, we can't call State of the Union, but it was, a State of the Union speech. I thought a very upbeat tone, talking about what America can do, that we can get out of this. And talking about all the ways he was going to help us get out of this. I think he's working very, very hard. I don't know of any president who, in his first 2 months in office, has gotten so many bills passed, so many things in the works, there's some $1 billion that's already out the pipeline ready to help the economy. This is a guy who has hit the ground running. And I think, in addition to his tone changing, as I think it should, because you're right, you can talk down the economy, now he's talking it up, he's getting so much done, and now we're going to put it in the pipeline, and wait for it to work.
Well, he certainly has a lot enacted. I'm not going to say agree with you that there have been so many bills enacted. In fact, there have been precious few bills that have been enacted. It's just that everything and
you can stick a lot in one bill.
Everything and its brother in the kitchen sink went into that stimulus.
It doesn't matter whether it's one bill or six bills.
Right.
It's $1 billion. $700 billion.
Everything that was on the wish list. Yes, you're right. It was not a State of the Union speech, but he was up there in front of a joint session of Congress.
For all intents and purposes,
it was a State of the Union because it had all 73 things that had been on the wish list for everything, and he, you know, rolled them out. You know, each individual applause line and things like that. But the fact is, yes, in the stimulus bill were almost everything that he wanted to have accomplished in his first term in office. If not fully funded,
there were a couple things.
Fully funded, a down payment.
Three Republicans, I think, hurt one of the things that was most important, which was giving money to the states. As you know, states have to balance their budgets. They're like the federal government. They can't print money. We can't have Virginia money and California money. And if they could, they would, and they used to, you know, 200 some odd years ago.
What a shame that the federal government can't.
What it means is that states have to cut their budgets at exactly the worst time. They have to they're sort of forced to be mini Hoovers. Hoover's great mistake, I hope you agree, in 1929 to 1933, when it took what was really just a recession in 29 and turned it into the Great Depression by the time FDR came to power in 33. His mistake was cutting the economy, was raising, balancing the budget, raising taxes and cutting spending at a time when Americans most needed a stimulus. And what the states have to do, because they're required to balance their budgets and because people are paying less taxes, they have to. They're not earning as much. The markets are down. And so they have to cut back on teachers and firefighters and police officers and all the stimulative effect that local governments do. One of the best things, I think, that was in the original stimulus package was giving money to states so they wouldn't have to do like California Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger had to do and basically say, we don't have any money anymore. You know, I owe you. Charlie Crist, another Republican governor who supported the stimulus package, was hurting. And now I'm sorry that in order to get the three Republican votes to go over a filibuster, they basically halved, later they put a little bit back in, but they took the money down from 70-something billion to 40-something billion. So the states are still strapped. In Virginia, I know, it's hard for Governor Kaine's legislature to find a budget in these difficult times. The one thing Republicans did to the bill to get the three Republicans, I think, was make it worse.
All right, well, First of all, I will agree with you that when Hoover raised taxes in the middle of a weak economy, that was a critical mistake.
And cut spending.
I'm not going to go with you on that. I think you have to redirect spending. I think, you know, cutting spending is certainly part of it. But you have to, you know, there's a lot of nice-to-haves, want-to-haves, wasteful spendings, pork, all that stuff. You know, you want to get rid of that. And what did we find last week? We found that the Congress just passed leftover from last year. They passed a budget last year, last year's budget with over 9,000 line item pork projects in it, also known as the dreaded earmark. You know, Obama told us he was going to get flat out going to get rid of earmarks.
No, he never told us that.
No, he did. He did. On the campaign trail, he said he was getting rid of earmarks.
He said he was going to reform earmarks. He never said he was going to get rid of them entirely. Well, check this out.
Next time I'm back,
I'll look this up.
Next time I'm back,
what he did say is he was getting rid of earmarks in the stimulus package, and there were none.
So by reforming it, what he did was he increased from 4,000 to 9,000 the number of earmarks that the members of Congress have. Mark, it's all wasteful spending. I mean, come on. Let's just take one that, you know, probably was requested by a Republican. I don't know, there's only one Democrat in the state, although, you know, he's a freshman, they may have it given to him. $278,000 to the Alaska PTA. What's that all about in terms of, it's just gross pork,
First to suggest to you that if Alaskans want a strong PTA, they should pay for it out of their own money rather than the federal budget.
But all the Democrats seem to vote for it.
Well, but here's the thing. First of all times to be against pork, and, you know, I'm usually not a big fan of pork, this is probably the least important time. This is, you know, if you were to rate what Americans are concerned most about, I think you'll find that today pork is one of the least things, because pork, most of it actually stimulates the economy. Even though we would prefer to put it in other places, it does help jobs. I'm not defending pork in general, but I'm saying that there's at this time we need massive government spending. I would rather have it, frankly, on things that we can all agree are worthwhile rather than some of this stuff. But in general, this is the time we need big spending.
A public works component of the stimulus is certainly appropriate.
You agree. Building roads and bridges.
I'm going to go
there. Probably not even against the high-speed rail train, are you?
Well, is that the one from Las Vegas to Los Angeles?
First of all, there's no such train.
I'm sure
you know that that's made up by Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh. They actually have not specified any routes.
What's wrong with Las Vegas to L.A.?
We have a high-speed train from Boston to New York to D.C. If you look at the next route of sort of close-together American cities, frequently traveled routes, L.A., Las Vegas, it's a four-hour drive. It's in the desert. That actually makes sense to me. Right. I don't see why that's even pork.
The first thing that's wrong with it is, number one, it ought to be built by private industry. But granting the fact that in time like this, we want to have a significant public works component of the stimulus bill.
Are you going to have all the roads built by private industry, too? I mean,
no, just the railroads.
Ayn Rand would
just
have
the
every...
Just the railroads. No, not the roads. Just the railroads.
You don't see the railroads as a public good. You would have us go back to the days of the 1800s where you have, you know, the CEO Railroad and the Santa Fe Railroad, and every time the train switches tracks, you have to pay somebody else and... you really think that we need private industry running the railroad?
I don't think the rich high rollers from L.A. going to Las Vegas are going to have to switch trains. I mean, I think they know exactly, you know, where they're going and how they're doing it.
Well,
and, you know,
it's not all rich high rollers, by the way, going to Vegas, as you know. It's everybody.
Well,
but the point is...
Except for the fact that, of course, we have to remember the president said nobody's allowed to go to Las Vegas until the recession's over. So he did say, I don't want you going to Las Vegas, you know, and stuff like that.
I think he's talking about the CEOs of the companies we were bailing out. I wish they wouldn't go to Las Vegas either. We're going to take a break. Also, hopefully give our listeners a chance to call in. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. What do you think ails the economy? What do you think is the solution to fix it? And I want to talk about the budget bill left over from last year, because what's fascinating about the bill is that you got as many Republicans supporting pork as Democrats. It seems that Congress doesn't really change its ways. So we'll be right back right after this.
Saving for retirement might be easy for some folks, but for others, it might take a little more work. And for those who haven't started, there are still things you can do to catch up.
Oh, that is good news.
Like getting out from underneath past debt. And don't get wrapped up with high-interest credit cards.
Get you some eyes.
Be diversified with your investments. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Your financial goals are not out of reach. The choice is clear. For a happy ending, choose to save.
Everyone with alcohol and drug addiction is in the same boat. With treatment, you can find solid ground. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dude, are you sure you want this tattoo? Because...
just do it!
Some mistakes in life are permanent. Like hearing loss. To learn how to protect your hearing, visit ASHA.org.
You've probably heard about heart disease, but did you know that it's the number one killer of women nationwide? Heart disease claims more lives each year than breast cancer, lung cancer, or strokes combined, but there are steps you can take to protect yourself against it. For more information on how you can prevent heart disease, contact your local American Heart Association or visit their website at www.americanheart.org.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's the economy, stupid. That is the issue on everyone's minds. That is the issue that most people, I agree with my guest, Mike Lane, Republican strategist, will be judging President Obama on. I just hope that Americans give him enough time to do what he needs to do. We're talking right now about not the stimulus package, which has passed, but the next big bill coming around the corner. And this is leftover business. This is like warmed over leftovers. This is something that is for this fiscal year, for 09. It should have been passed last October. But, well, you know, President Bush and Congress couldn't agree on anything, so they're working it over now. It's been in the works now for almost 6 months, and it is like most spending bills that come through Congress. It's an omnibus bill. Hopefully Congress will do it right next time around, and they will appropriate for the defense and for health care and for education and for each part. But now they're doing what they tend to do and have done pretty much for the last 8 years. They throw everything in one bucket and stir and sprinkle it with a little bit of earmarks for everyone's jurisdiction. It's same old, same old. I will mention a couple different.
I think they've been stuck on omnibuses for about the last 28 years.
Well, you're
not
right.
Just the last eight.
There were some bills that weren't. I remember in Clinton years, every now and then, maybe half the time, you would actually get real budgets out there.
It goes back to the Clinton era.
It goes back to the Carter era.
It probably does.
And you know, it's a problem, basically, because then you throw everything in, and it's a bill, it's 4,000 pages, and the president's afraid to veto it. And the whole idea is everyone gets what they want in there so that no one can vote against it.
Mm-hmm.
I firmly agree it's not the way I would prefer to legislate, but they got to get rid of this old business before they can get on to the new business. One thing, though, that I think is worth pointing out, you mentioned there were 9,000 earmarks, and there were 4,000 before. That, I suggest, is the wrong metric. It's not the number of earmarks, but the amount of earmarks. And in that respect, we're going in the right direction. There are only one-fifth the total amount of earmarks as there was last time, in terms of money. In other words, I think it was... It's 400 million? I think it is. It's 400 million, and last time it was 2 billion. So earmarks are down 80%, even if the number has increased.
On the left side, the numbers I recollect are wholly out of whack with what you just said, but just for the sake of discussion, I'm going to go with what you're saying there.
I'll show it. I've read that the number in terms of the total amount spent is a percent, it's only 1% of the bill. And I believe that last time it was 5%.
But the bill is...
it's a bigger bill.
$450 billion, right? Or
something like that.
Something...
right. And it's about... yeah, it's about 4... It's 1% of the bill.
Okay. But the number I recall...
so it's 4 billion out of 450 billion.
Just for the yes. Photographic record, the number I recall hearing is 5 billion in earmarks.
Okay, it's about 1%.
We'll look it
that's
up.
What I remember.
We'll look it up.
No, I don't dispute it. Maybe... the point is it's 1% of the bill rather than 5% of the bill.
Right.
It's actually going down. And the other thing that's interesting is that... 40% of it was put in by Republicans. Now, if you look at the Senate,
shame on them.
It's 59. Franken's going to be chosen. Coleman can hold it out as long as he wants, but he's only about 1 month. His clock is ticking, and he can go and work for Michael Steele, perhaps. Al Franken is going to be Minnesota's next senator. It's just a matter of time. You don't disagree with me on that.
I'm
going to
call it a 50-50 toss-up.
Oh, no way. You're not going to do that.
It's a 50-50 toss-up.
Coleman does not have a chance. He's going back and actually asking the court now to count votes that he asked him not to count 2 months ago.
If they count all the votes, then Coleman wins. The question
that's
is, will
true.
They? Yeah, if they count all the votes, then
not
Coleman
true at all.
Will win.
Where do you get that? Voting the Coleman campaign.
Very briefly, the votes that have been excluded are all the votes from Republican areas.
That's not true.
The guy from Acorn who headed the electoral board, excluded the Republican votes and counted all the Franken votes. So we'll see.
I can't let this pass.
It may be he was on firm legal ground. It may be he was not on firm legal ground. We're going to find out. The courts will discuss that. But if all the votes are counted, then it will be a Coleman victory.
Mike, the Minnesota Supreme Court is firmly in Republican hands. Tim Pawlenty, the governor of Minnesota, has appointed five of them.
Mm-hmm.
They are five Republicans, two Democrats. Actually, I think one of them was Jesse Ventura, a holdover, but it's solidly with the Republicans. This is not a partisan issue. They're simply following the law of Minnesota.
What Coleman is
trying to put forward is saying just count the votes in my areas. If Al Franken also put forward the votes that can't be legally counted because, the people didn't sign the absentee ballot or so forth, you'd have even more votes. My point is,
again,
under any standard, whether you follow the law or whether you add in votes that aren't following the law, Al Franken wins. The courts know that, and I think they're getting so desperate. It's interesting. I think they're about ready to throw Coleman's case out of court.
Well, I'll take that bet.
Really? Because I'll bet money on it. we can talk about this after the show.
I mean, ultimately they will issue a ruling, but they're not going to toss it out of court. They're going to issue a ruling, and I think we're still probably 45 days away from the ruling.
I think that Coleman has lost, and he's just doing his best to tread water to have one less Democratic vote. But my point going back is Democrats are 59-41 in the Senate, if you want to call it 58.5, 41.5. And yet, the earmarks fell in the same way, 60-40 or so. You find, in fact, that 6 of the 10 largest earmarkers are Republicans. And in fact, the head of the Republican Party, arguably the most powerful Republican in the land these days, is Mitch McConnell, the minority leader of the United States Senate. The Senate is the only body that can stop a Democratic agenda, right? You've got the president, you've got the House, and you at least throw a filibuster in. So Mitch McConnell is probably, at this moment, the country's most powerful Republican. And he himself had 36 earmarks in the bill. Do you think the Republicans should, if they really believe in earmark reform, fire Mitch McConnell and elect John McCain?
You know, I think what they should do is, as a caucus, just pull back from the earmarks. It's a very tough thing. When the game is played one way, for you to stand on principle and say, well, we're not going to play according to those rules. We're going to skew our constituents. We're not going to have any pork brought home. We're going to let the Democrats have 100% of it. And we're going to stand on principle. We're not going to do any earmarks. It's a very, very tough way to go, but I think they should do it. And the example is in the House. The Republican leader, John Boehner, been in the House for almost 25 years, has never once had one single earmark in 25 years.
So fire McConnell. You can elect Coburn. You can elect John McCain. Are you advocating to get rid of these earmarks that control your party?
That's a Senate caucus decision.
I want to know your view on it.
If they wanted to do that, that would be fine.
Would you, if you were in the Senate, if you were Senator Mike Lane, God help us all, would you vote to take down McConnell?
No. I'd keep McConnell in there. I think McConnell's an excellent leader.
Earmarks are really not that important. They're not enough to take down your leader.
I think he's dead wrong on earmarks. I think he ought to reform his own approach to this thing.
He's not the only one.
But other than McCain and Coburn,
I can't. My guess is every other Republican has put earmarks in this bill. Even Lindsey Graham, who has talked loudly against earmarks, has put earmarks in the bill. In fact, I saw Lindsey Graham on Meet the Press. I don't know if you saw that this Sunday. It was very interesting. Lindsey Graham made the important distinction between earmarks and pork. Graham is not against pork. Most members of Congress aren't. Even John McCain is not against pork, the idea that you should give money to your district if they need money. What he's against is earmarks. In other words, having it put in the bill without discussion, without negotiation.
Right.
It should be open and transparent. That's the difference, right?
Well, yes and no. The fact is, members of Congress stick in pet projects that have typically been subject to no review at all.
Right. But that's not the case anymore.
It actually is the case. I just look at our home district here and the things that our Congressman Jim Moran brought home. A guy who likes to refer to himself as the king of earmarks.
I think that would be Jack Murtha, actually. I think he gets credit as the king of earmarks.
Well, he may be the king of earmarks, but Moran claims the title as king of earmarks. They can fight it out over which one's more corrupt than the other, but the fact of the matter
is... I think Murtha's definitely more corrupt. I'm willing to say that. I'm not afraid to call him out on that.
All right. But the real situation on that is, has it been identified as a necessary project, or is it just something that member of Congress is bringing back to pay off essentially a favored contributor or a favored constituent or something like that. And I don't believe that these things have gone through the process of daylight and examination.
Well, let me tell you what we've improved, and then we can both agree we have some ways to go. First of all, as I said, it's 1% of the budget, not 5%. That's a big plus. The other thing is that even though they were put in, this was done in the old ways, this was done back in the Bush era, even though they were put in without much transparency, today they are transparent. One of the things President Obama has made clear, and I'm very glad he did, and I'm sure you support as well, is that in all these bills, now every earmark is absolutely clearly laid out. Every American can look and complain. You can get your examples. It's all there. It used to be just 1 year ago that they put earmarks in the bill, and you can't even find out what they were until after the bill had already been passed. Now, I would prefer we go one step further and actually know, and in fact, President Obama said this as well in a speech. He said that, we've come some ways, we can now see what they are. In the future, he's going to insist that if people want it, that people talk about it in advance, not just once it's in the bill, but when they propose it to be in the bill. So I think we're going in the right direction, and President Obama's going to take us even further in the right direction. Even you will like that.
I do not think that President Obama will take us. He was fairly substantially and directly rebuked by Majority Leader Reid today, who essentially told Obama that he could go play in the sandbox. Go fly a kite, go play in the sandbox. That the president had absolutely no prerogatives and no influence on this, and they were inclined not to listen to anything he had to say.
President Obama has an extremely high approval rating right now.
Not all that high.
About 58 to 60%.
Right. It's typical for a president 6 weeks into
office. Well, but not typical in these tough economic times. I mean, it's very rare to have a president have this high to be in this bad economic times. I think that this bill is a transition bill. I really do. I think that we're much, much better than we used to be. That we are, like I said, we've cut down earmarks from 5% to 1%. We now at least see them after they're originally put in, before they're voted on. And come next bill, I think you'll find that there'll be even fewer earmarks and that we will see them as they're put in.
Mark, if in the stimulus bill, he was willing to fight for and get 110% of what he wanted in terms of spending.
Well, he didn't get
Why was he willing to settle for 20% of the reforms that he's been talking about in this particular bill? It just seems to me he could have fought harder and maybe gotten what he really wanted, but he didn't really want it.
Well, he didn't get the stimulus package. As you recall, he lost about $70 billion because of your three Republican friends. We're going to talk more about the Congress, what they're doing, how they can fix the economy, and I'm going to answer Tony from Falls Church's question when we come back. Toll free, 888-488-MARK.
I need a job.
Necesito trabajo.
I would like to speak English better.
Me gustaría hablar inglés mejor.
I want to be a U.S. citizen.
Quisiera ser ciudadano de los Estados Unidos.
For over 35 years.
Por más de 35 años.
The Hispanic Committee of Virginia has been serving our community.
El Comité Hispano de Virginia ha estado sirviendo a nuestra comunidad.
Job training and placement.
Capacitación, ayuda para conseguir trabajo.
Education for children and adults.
Educación para niños y adultos.
Immigration, naturalization, and medical referrals.
Ayuda para los procesos de inmigración y naturalización y orientación sobre médicos
are a small part of what we do.
Son solo una pequeña parte de lo que hacemos.
For help, information, or to volunteer,
para ayuda, información o para ofrecerse como voluntario,
contact the Hispanic Committee of Virginia.
Comuníquese con el Comité Hispano de Virginia.
Helping everyone participate more fully in American society.
Ayudando a todos a participar plenamente en la sociedad norteamericana.
Hey, Lena.
was yours?
Would you notice if you were missing half your kidney function? According to the National Kidney Foundation, 20 million people have chronic kidney disease, and 20 million more may be at risk and not even know it. Anyone with high blood pressure, diabetes, or family history of chronic kidney disease is at risk. Early diagnosis is vitally important. To get the whole story, talk to your doctor and visit the National Kidney Foundation at kidney.org or call for a free brochure. Because when it comes to chronic kidney disease, you might not know the half.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. What are we going to do to fix the economy? What is Congress doing? What should they be doing? What should the president be doing? I was asked a question in the break by Tony from Falls Church. It's a very good question. I wish Tony could call in. By the way, you could still call in 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, and ask your question, express your view. But Tony wanted to know if I believe in digital tracking of bills. And what he means by that is basically, as I understand it, a way to find out where every bill comes from. In other words, you know, this word came from this congressional office, and this word came from this congressional office. I'll tell you, I'm of two minds about that, which is why it's a good question. On the one hand, you really want to know where things come from. You want to know, for example, who wrote that Alaska PTA? Was it a Republican? Was it a Democrat? You know, there's we got one of each, or two Republican. Oh,
we have a Republican House member and a split Senate.
A split Senate, right. So we'd want to know where that comes from. That's fair. I want to know which office it's from. But I tell you, I'm a little afraid, having been working in the legislature, as you know, I used to work writing bills. There is a pride of authorship problem. Whenever any people work together, I think artists will recognize it as well. Legislators have the same thing. Musicians, artists have the same problem. And that is that people are less likely to agree on a compromise if they see it as Mr. Smith's compromise rather than Mrs. Jones' compromise. Because, you know, Mrs. Jones has it her way, Mr. Smith has it his way. Mrs. Jones probably would be okay with Mr. Smith's version, but if you say, aha, Congressman Smith wrote this and Congresswoman Jones did not, Congresswoman Jones won't get the credit, and so there's a little danger there. So I guess what I'd be willing to say is I'd be willing to say perhaps for like earmarks, for example. We have pork for a specific state. Okay, I want to know where that's come from. But whether someone says, you know, whereas or whereby or writes the right, I wouldn't want to have too much digital tracking. I actually think it could harm the legislative process, which, as they say, is a lot like making sausage. Yeah, it can taste good at the end, but you don't want to see it being made.
You know, making sausage should never be a transparent process.
Well, well, that's exactly the problem.
It's not people. I mean, the sausage industry would go dead if it was a transparent process.
I think that's right.
However, making legislation, I think, should be reformed to the point where it is as transparent as possible. Now, bringing up the point that you just said, you know, okay, if you've reached a compromise, who's going to get credit for the compromise? Does that mean the compromise falls apart, et cetera?
You know, here's what
maybe,
you can do.
Maybe you can give, you know, dual attribution.
Exactly. Or, that would solve the problem. That's a great idea. What you do is you say, this section was, you know what you do? You make every section of a bill, write the authors down. And there could be more than one. That's good, because politicians love joint credit. So you could say, Section 1B was written by these 16 congressional offices, and Section 1C signed on by these congressional offices. And that's probably the best way to do it. Then you don't have the pride of authorship problem that I talked about. We still have the transparency that you and I want. I think that would work. So
fun.
We can answer Tony.
Tell Tony we're all for it.
We're all for it. Let me talk broader, though, than just about Congress, because obviously some of this is congressional action. Some of it is Department of Treasury. President Obama put forward a very strong proposal that I think is very good to help people who are close to the brink of foreclosure. Not the people who are deep underwater, not the investors and not the people that bought homes and couldn't afford a single mortgage payment, but the people who are 95% there because of the terrible economy, their housing prices have dropped, and now they can't afford to pay their mortgage. It gives them a chance to refinance at the lower rates that exist now, another thing that I think President Obama and Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner and the Federal Reserve are all working together to lower interest rates to make it easier. And I really can't see the problem with this, but I do recall a certain, I think it's Richard Santelli is his name, on the floor of...
And CNBC reporter.
CNBC reporter on the floor of the Chicago Stock Exchange that seems to become a hero among Republicans. for saying...
Well, I think among Americans.
Well, I would say far-right conservatives, because most Americans support this plan. Do you agree with Santelli? When Santelli said, no, we can't do this. We can't help people pay their mortgages.
Here's the point. There obviously is a need to stabilize the housing market as part of the economic recovery. Now, the question is, how deep a hole do you want to dig in that? How much of a footprint do you want to make? How big is the effort? And then what kind of the effort, what shape is that footprint? And the answer, I think, Mark, is that, there are some people who I think, in my mind, can qualify for some assistance. But then there are some other people in the Obama plan that I can't understand why they would qualify for assistance. You know, one of the things that got us involved in this whole mess was the stated income mortgages, where they didn't really check you out. You just went to a mortgage loan officer and you say, I make $160,000 a year. They'd put down $160,000 a year. They'd qualify you, and bingo, you know, you'd have your loan when you might have been making $160 a year.
They're excluded by this.
No, they're not.
Sure they are.
People who fraudulently reported their income are not excluded in the president's proposal. That is one of the things that absolutely astounds me.
People who are excluded, the proposal is not based on checking each and every homeowner in America to see whether they were making the money they said they were making. That would be very expensive to do. What he has done is said you could only be underwater so much. In fact, only 5% underwater. Mm-hmm. Actually, your home must be valued at least at a 95% of the amount
you owe,
up to about 120%. If you're deep underwater and you can't afford it, you don't have a chance under this. So you're not disagreeing with me that the plan only protects the people that are close, that are, if we use a swimming pool example, the water level's about right here. We're not talking about people for whom the water level's 5 feet up in the air.
Let me give you the example then that's perhaps a little bit more vivid, just like your swimming pool example. Not $160,000 a year versus $160 a year, but $160,000 a year versus $120,000 a year.
Here's the thing.
And if you lied about that $40,000 in income and you're behind because of that, you still get assistance under the president's program.
Okay. And the reason,
and
but the,
I
understand the reason
I don't
why.
Like that. They lied about their income. It's fraudulently obtained.
Americans across the country, we're in tax season now. I just finished mine. I told the truth on mine, but we know that people across the country lie on their taxes. And what it means is that the IRS only audits a small number of us. They do. They find out you lie. You go to jail. They don't audit all of us. They don't check all of us. It would be extremely expensive to have the government check each and every person to make sure that every single thing they've done. I mean, I don't like when people commit fraud either. If it's discovered, then it seems to me that any time, there's not just civil fraud, there's criminal fraud. A bank can go out, can sue you, you can bring it to the attention of the authorities, put people in jail for it. I'm fine with that. But in order to make a plan simple, you have to know whether you're covered or not. You're not going to say, oh, he said he was making $140,000, he only made $138,000, he rounded up. No, it's very simple. If your home is worth so much by an appraiser, that's, you know, everyone agrees is a fair appraiser, then you're in the plan. If it's not, you're not. If someone lied about their income slightly but is able to pay off their mortgage under the plan, that to me, you don't want the cost of finding all these people, do you?
Well, you know what? Maybe we don't have to investigate every single person who applies for a refi. Let's include a provision in there that if you lie on your refinance application, that would be a criminal offense.
I'm okay with that, but it already is.
And one of the things you need...
It already is. We don't need that in the law. Fraud's already against the law.
What you need to do is you need to certify in the refi that you need to certify that everything in my original application was absolutely 100% true and sign it there. And that incorporates your previous corruption into the current one. If you do that and they come back and find out later, they can prosecute you and send you to jail rather than...
I'm okay with that, but the president's not okay with it.
That's the problem. Why is the president not okay with it?
I think the question is this a time when we want the cops very carefully prosecuting every case of fraud? I mean, we have...
I do. If it's my tax money, it's going to bail out a guy who lied on his mortgage application, then I want it done.
Here's what I don't understand. I don't understand when Rick Santelli says it. You're so concerned about the person struggling to make a living that is in a home that might have said they make $100,000 when they're only making $90,000, and yet you have massive Wall Street concerns. AIG stealing tens of billions of dollars. You know, Bernie Madoff, frankly, was a small piker compared to some of the fellows. And they're the ones who brought our economy to where it is now, the brink of destruction, I don't hear Republicans saying off with their heads. Instead, they're concerned about someone who's struggling to make a living and may have overstated by $2,000 on a mortgage thing. You know, there are small crimes and there are big crimes. And to me, it seems that Republicans never care when a rich person breaks the law. They only want to stop those poor people who maybe are getting one extra food stamp they shouldn't have.
Okay, Mark, listen and listen closely.
All right.
AIG, off with their heads.
Fire them
heads.
All. Fire them all.
Off
with them. Much of them in jail.
No. Off with their heads.
All right.
And then if any of them still have a pulse, then let's prosecute them and put whatever, you know, blood that's still flowing
Citibank?
In jail.
Citibank, you're okay
off with
that?
Their heads.
All
off
right.
with their heads.
All of them.
No more bailout. Let AIG fail. Let Citibank fail. Let GM fail. You know, I mean, how much money are we going to waste on these crooks?
Well, but see, GM I actually see as a different condition. GM, well, I agree they made the wrong cars for a number of years. They didn't participate in some of these toxic loans that bankers should know better about, that Lehman Brothers should have known better about. I mean, they're the ones I really want to see go down the hill.
All right, but...
And honestly, I want to make them pay back. How do you know, it's interesting.
But GM's own auditors just came out with a report that said GM can't make it. They said, you know, there's no realistic scenario here.
If there's no realistic
scenario, GM can make it. You know, and they've already gotten $12 billion of our money as it is, and they can't make it.
I don't agree in giving life a sustaining. I don't believe in Terry Schiavo being kept alive. I don't believe in companies who have no chance of survival being kept alive. I don't think the epitaph is yet written for General Motors. At least I hope not. I think that manufacturing in America is very important, not just for GM, but for auto suppliers, for dealerships all across the country. I want to be 100% convinced that this patient is incapable of saving them before we give them life-sustaining...
All right. Well, we'll see what the president does. I hope the president lets them go into bankruptcy. Even GM, who the whole fall, as they were going through it, said, you know, bankruptcy is just not an option. We can't do it, blah, blah, blah. GM has now said, well, bankruptcy is certainly an option if we can't get, you know, more loans and stuff like that. So I think they see the handwriting on the wall. You know, let them reorganize.
I don't know.
Let them reorganize. Let them renegotiate their contracts.
Well, see, that's the thing. Because if they renegotiate the contracts, you and I are going to be paying for them. Right? I mean, maybe we'll pay for it one way or the other. But if people are put on the public dole, the people who've worked very hard...
No, they'll be put on the public dole.
I mean, you're talking about people, retirees, people who've worked hard all of their lives, signed a deal with GM, were promised a pension that GM should have had no right in the law to dip into. Once you sign a deal and your employer puts a pension, that should be untouchable. And it seems to me an employee that touches that pension, that employer ought to go to jail. Are you with me on that?
Well, I don't think the law says that, so no, I wouldn't be with you unless
why
the law
not?
Said that they...
No, but why?
Because Congress hasn't seen fit to do it.
Well,
you know?
Would you change the law? It seems to me that when you have an employer make a promise to an employee that you're going to have a retirement...
Mark, look.
That they ought to keep that promise, and it's very easy to keep that promise. You put the money aside. If they don't fund that pension, and I would make it the law, that if an employer doesn't fund a pension that they promised to fund in a contract in some untouchable bank account, lockbox, as it were, I think I want to put the CEO in jail because these workers worked for 30, 40, 50 years. They had a contract. They had a right to expect the result of their contract. And they're just not getting it. And the fact that you want to take their money away rather than go after the execs,
I don't want to take their money away. I think GM needs to renegotiate their contracts, and you know they and the unions will decide how they are best renegotiated. And the unions represent their members, so that's what we will, you know, what we'll come out with. But you know, to solve the pension problem, I don't want to get involved in pensions, but in 30 seconds or less, you know, the pensions that the auto workers have are an anachronism. I mean, they're a throwback to the old days.
Republicans hate pensions,
No. Pensions are fine. Retirement programs are fine. But defined benefit plans are just yesterday's news. You need to go to a defined contribution plan. It needs to be self-directed by the person who owns it. And let them take the money that's contributed by their employer on their behalf into their pension plan. And then they can self-direct it, and they can plan for their own retirement. And if they want to empower the union to do that, that's fine. But a defined benefit plan is just so work.
You know, and I think of the best known defined benefit plan in the country. It's called Social Security. And as I recall,
it doesn't
work.
Your
Republicans wanted to privatize it years ago.
It doesn't work.
Imagine if we had done that. How many Americans today would be getting half their Social Security checks because it was tied to the market?
Absolutely.
Great idea,
Absolutely
Mike.
Absolutely not.
I'm sure glad
Absolutely
that we
none.
Didn't do it.
Don't listen to them. Don't listen to them.
888-888-MARK. Call in. Give us your views. We'll be right back.
This year, 28,000 Americans will be diagnosed with oral cancer. Every year, 7,000 Americans die of oral cancer.
I'm Eva Cohen, and I'm an oral cancer survivor. I didn't fit the profile. I didn't smoke or drink. I had no family history of cancer. No family history of cancer. I was 31 years old. 31 years old. I went to see my dentist about a sore in my mouth that wouldn't heal. It was oral cancer. I had to have a radical neck dissection and a portion of my tongue reconstructed. I didn't know if I was going to live or die.
I'm Surgeon General Richard Carmona. The survival rate for oral cancer is only 50%. Oral cancer can happen to anyone. If you have a sore or lesion in your mouth that doesn't heal within 2 weeks, see your dentist. Early detection is the key.
Early detection saves lives. I know.
One in eight Americans goes hungry. One idea helped change that. A community started a garden that blossomed into farmers markets. One in six children lives in poverty. One group of women found an answer by opening a daycare center that their neighbors could afford. Today, 36 million Americans live in poverty. But one by one, people are helping themselves and each other to change the picture of poverty to one of hope. For easy ways you can help, visit PovertyUSA.org.
Two words for you. Pop quiz. Ready? Name any funny movie. A drama. Name a mystery. And one more thing. Name the movie your kids saw today in science class.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's the economy, stupid. What ails us? What are the solutions? Is President Obama's plan the correct one? Or is it the party of just say no, the Republican Party? No, 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 everything Obama does is awful. I have that
representative. No, he's actually done a few good things. We'll talk about that sometime.
Oh, well, good. I'll tell you. Well, I got a caller. But after the caller, Mike, Mike Lane, of course, is the president of Intelligence Strategies. I want you to come tell me the things that you like that Obama has done. That would be a rare, wonderful thing to hear from you. Let's go right now, though, to George from Fairfax. George, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been listening this evening, and you discussed a lot of options and criticisms and stuff like that. But it seems to me that when you have a judiciary, is part of the that in the case of Madoff, when that guy violates bail, and then they continue bail under the conditions that they have, and you have the judiciary basically supporting that. I wonder how far you're ever going to get to straightening of this mess out.
I'll tell you, I don't think you'll find any disagreement from me or from Mike that you should throw the book at Bernie Madoff.
It's not just Madoff, it's the judiciary. The judiciary have extended bail to him. You have two criminals on the Supreme Court, Thomas and Alito. I mean, why would anyone have any faith in the judicial process?
Mike, you want to take that? Well,
George, you know, nothing is perfect, at least of all our judicial system. I think that you know, we're very hopeful that as the process plays out, and at the end of the day, we're going to wind up with a transparent trial. We're going to see what the facts were. We're going to see what crimes Bernie Madoff committed. We're going to find out if he did it alone or if there were any accomplices involved in it. And in the end, all guilty parties should be held responsible and should be held accountable. You know, you don't always, you know, have a perfect path to follow all the way through.
No,
George, let me give you some reason for hope. And I think there's a case that can tell you whether or not our judiciary is corrupt, and it's right now before the United States Supreme Court. I want to know if you've heard about it. I want to tell our listeners about it. It's a case coming out of West Virginia. You may have heard it, between a small coal company and a large coal company. And in this case, you had the small coal company win the case down in the lower court. And the large coal company appealed, and the head of that large coal company gave $3 million to elect a new justice on the West Virginia Supreme Court. That justice cast the deciding vote for his friend that gave him $3 million and helped him win a multi-million dollar case. This case is up before the United States Supreme Court. They just had oral argument. on whether or not a judge should recuse himself if he gets millions of dollars from a party in the case. To me, it's obvious. Of course he should. And I think you're going to find, I predict, a 5-4 decision. I think you'll find Justice Kennedy will stand with the more Democratic, more liberal justices, with Ginsburg and Breyer and Souter and Stevens, to hold that, you know what, if you pay off a judge $3 million, then maybe he shouldn't sit and judge your case. And when we win that, and I think we will, although I think it'll be close, a 5-4 decision, and I don't think Alito or Thomas will vote for it, I think you'll see that there is still some justice in America. Mike, what do you think of that case? You agree with me that you got to recuse yourself if you get millions of dollars from a party?
Absolutely.
All right. So
absolutely.
You can agree with me that you want this.
You have millions of dollars, I do.
Okay. Yeah. Well, good. See, even Mike thinks it's right. But go ahead, George.
No, I agree. I'm starting to track that case as well. And it seems pretty obvious. It doesn't take a whiz to figure that one out, does it?
Well, I'll tell you, I think it's going to be 5-4. I think you're going to find the four most right-wing justices are going to vote to uphold the corruption. But I think we're going to get swing Justice Kennedy on our side on this one. And it's a good test of the fact that there's still some honesty in the court system.
And a good reason for some hope.
Let me ask you this before you go, George.
Yeah.
In terms of the economy, how do you think President Obama is doing? How do you think Congress is doing?
Well, the media are slaughtering him at this point. It seems like, I mean, you hear repeatedly the 100 days and stuff. It hasn't even been 30 days. When Bush was in office in that first term, he didn't hear anything after the 100 days.
Yeah, it's been about 40 days.
Yeah, and I read on the blogs as well, and there is so much criticism of him. I mean, death threats and stuff like that. It just seems so parallel with so many other places when you get that right-wing extremism in there that they become extremely vocal. Well, and I think he's trying. I think Congress is a huge hurdle because they're addicted to that lobbyist money. They're addicted to the support they're getting from large corporations.
You know,
I can't afford to take Obama out to breakfast for $35,000. I don't have a need either.
George, you make a really good point that I want to raise with Mike. Mike, one of the things that you and I definitely disagreed on was the McCain-Feingold campaign finance reform. It seems to me that if you really don't like pork, and you really don't like earmarks, and you really don't like people sticking in things that help well-heeled constituents, you're going to stop the practice of having constituents fund campaigns. Because whether it's $3 million going to a West Virginia judge, or whether it's $2 million going to Jack Murtha, or $1 million from the tobacco industry to Mitch McConnell, and then you turn around and help the people that brought you to the table, that to me, it smacks of bribery. I realize it is legal, but I don't think it should be. And if we had public financing of campaigns, we wouldn't have, I would suggest to you, as many porks and earmarks. It would be based on what is needed in that district and not just on who funds your campaign.
I think we can accomplish what you're trying to. I don't want my money going to elect Barack Obama, and you don't want your money going to elect George Bush. So, you know,
you can have the money go to both parties. I mean, you could.
I don't want my money going there. I want my money going to elect the people that I want to support.
But
and
my money
I want to be able to write
things I don't want. I mean, my money went to fund a war in Iraq that I don't support. Yeah,
but
a country.
But that's a national policy. That's not a campaign.
But it would be a national policy to publicly find it. Look, England does it, France does it. I haven't seen tremendous corruption among their parties, more so than we have.
No, but I mean, France's government is fairly pathetic. You know, the people that
French president's pretty good, honestly.
Well,
I think Nicolas Sarkozy is doing a decent job.
The French parliament's pathetic. I mean, they are just.
Love attacking the French.
They're so easy targets.
Let me ask you this, because it goes back to George's question about the fancy CEOs. Chuck Schumer, again, the same Meet the Press that I saw with Lindsey Graham, Senator Schumer of New York, talked about clawbacks. Clawback, in his view, means you actually go back and you say to these executives, whether they're at AIG or Citibank or anyone else that is needing these massive bailouts, you go into their stash and you say, you know what, you took a bonus of $100 million last year in 2008 while your company was losing billions of dollars. We want that money back. We're going to take it back into the company. You're getting billions of dollars from your company. You ran it into the ground. Claw it back. Now, a lot of Republicans are against that. I say it's all fair. That's what capitalism's all about.
It's not. It's communism. You can't take somebody's private property without a reason, without due process. And, you know, Chuck Schumer can't sit there and be judge, jury, and executioner and decide that, you know what, I don't think you deserve that bonus. Chuck Schumer has not a clue as to what a bonus is worth, what how somebody earns it. Chuck Schumer...
Wall Street doesn't have a clue as to how much a bonus is worth. They're paying golden parachutes for people who are running companies into the ground.
Chuck Schumer, quite honestly, is qualified to do one thing, and that's hog television time. And that's his only qualification
in all that he has. And he does it very well.
He does it extraordinarily well.
But how would you punish these executives? You told me you can throw the book at him.
No, look, if you give...
How about laws for the future?
If you want to attach money to the strings and conditions to the TARP when you give it to them, if you want to attach strings and conditions to the bailouts and things like that,
the cow's out of the barn by then.
Go ahead and do it. But, you know, you can't go back and remanufacture or create something that happened 12 months ago and say, you know what, take that. Mark, you know,
you want to punish people who said, I made 160 grand when I only made 140 grand. You want them to reconfirm everything and go to jail if they misstated something. But you take a guy that's stolen billions from the economy and you say,
he's not stealing business.
It's spilt milk. It's spilt milk.
It was,
they ruined the entire economy, these people. The people that paid a little bit for their mortgage, they didn't ruin the
economy. It was a 100%.
It was the Wall Street people.
If it was a 100% legal transaction to award the bonus, then I don't think that, you know, I mean, Schumer's a thief. You know, I mean, he just wants to take people's money. And
what happened to capitalism? What are the ideas?
That's what capitalism is.
No.
That's what capitalism is.
The capitalism I understand and I support says if you make a good product, you do a good job, you're creative, you create something good, you make a lot of money. If you do something bad, you run a company into the ground, you make huge mistakes that lose billions of dollars, you lose money. It seems to me that it can't be heads you win, tails you win. You do well, you make money. You do badly, you make money. That is exactly the crony capitalism that got us in this mess.
Well, look, I first of all, a year ago, all these companies were doing fine. Okay.
Yeah, so, a year ago you said we weren't headed for a recession. I remember. I have the tape.
A year ago, all these companies were doing fine. No, I said we were not in a recession. I didn't say that we weren't heading to a recession. I said we were not in a recession a year ago.
All right.
Now, a year ago, they were all doing fine, and so it would appear, you know, assuming they awarded the bonuses and the stock options and things like that in accordance with the corporate bylaws and the, you know, et cetera.
Do you think executives are overpaid?
Oh, I do, yeah.
You agree? Because in Japan, it's something like 40 times, not 400 times.
No.
If you go back 20 years in America, you don't see the 400 times.
No, I agree they're overpaid, but I'm not going to have...
What would you do about it?
Nothing. I would have stockholders or whatever.
They have no power. Would you believe in increasing stockholders' rights and actually requiring under federal law, because most of this is done under state law and it all goes to Delaware, requiring stockholders to have power to fire and to put their own nominees on the board, because they don't have that power today.
You know what?
Very hard to exercise.
They can either buy stock in a corporation if they like the way it's run, or they cannot buy stock in a corporation if they don't like
the way it's run. They're supposed to be the owners of the corporation.
Right.
They should be able to fire these executives.
Well,
it's virtually impossible in the current law.
Then they need to force a change in the corporate bylaws, not the government. I don't want the government getting involved in that.
And
that's socialism.
Let's talk about socialism, because you would take our Social Security and put it all in this crony capitalism market. If you had your way, Mike, retirees today would be earning 40% of their Social Security checks that they're getting right now. Good thing they didn't listen to you and George Bush, isn't it?
Absolutely not, Mark. In fact, you know, I believe the president's proposal back then was that it would be a 20-year thing. If you were 45 and younger, you could opt for privatization of your retirement. But if you were 46 or older, you'd be in the exact same position you're in today.
And the problem with privatization is when the market goes down the tubes like this, people starve. That's why Franklin Delano Roosevelt was right then, and why Republicans want to stop his legacy even today.
If I was 45 today, I'd be all in with everything.
Thanks for coming in, Mike, for the Inside Scoop. Roosevelt's legacy lives on. The New Deal is alive and well. It's going to help us all this time. Hope you enjoyed.
The president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document which he was sworn to uphold?